Well, big shout out to all the dads. Happy Father's Day. It's kind of a man's day here today. So grab your outline inside your program, and we're going to talk about men today. But in this context, what's the difference between a boy and a man? How do we make that distinction? In our culture, we don't have like a rite of passage. And so like, what does it look like? How does a boy become a man? Does a boy become a man when they graduate from high school? Or when they get their first car? When you move out of your parents' house, is that when you become a man? When you get married, is that when you become a man? Like, what does it look like? In some cultures, it's more definitive. They have a rite of passage. There's a group of people in Africa, and when a boy can kill a lion, he becomes a man. There's another culture in Alaska that when a boy can build an igloo all by himself, then he's a man. Or there's a really crazy rite of passage in Papua New Guinea. A boy has to go through this skin carving exercise. I brought some pictures here. Take a look at this. He's a boy, and he has to, I mean, that looks pretty painful. You're a boy until you go through that, and then afterwards, you become a man. So now he hasn't been through our rite of passage to know he needs to pull his pants up, but anyways, I mean, but that's, you know, but how do you become a man? That's the big thing. I have two sons, and so I parented two boys, and it was a parenting challenge to try to figure out how do you help them transition from boy to man when you're not even sure yourself what it looks like. For years and years, as a youth pastor, I worked with teenagers, and I met a lot of 14-year-olds that seemed like men. And then I've done my share of marriage and family counseling, and I've seen some 45-year-old men that seemed more like a boy. So how does it happen? What does it look like? It's a big idea this weekend. Write in your notes, maturity is the true measure of a man. So what does it look like? There's a organization that does this really crazy obstacle course called Tough Mudder. And what it is they do them all over the world, and they get a lot of men together and women, but mostly, or at least a lot of men, and they go through this obstacle course. And one of the leaders of this obstacle course, this organization, Tough Mudder, has something to say about what's going on in our culture right now. I wanted to read it to you. I'll just read it. It won't come up on the screen, but here he is right here. We don't really know if we're tough anymore. We don't have fist fights. We don't chop wood. Life has become convenient and easy. At Tough Mudder, we get a lot of what we call fight club males, 25 to 40-year-old guys with a white-collar job who hasn't been scared, hasn't been wet and muddy. He wants to test himself to see if he has what it's made to be proved out to be a man. Even though he's 38 and has a roller bag and a door on his minivan that the door closes by itself, he still wants to know, does he have the inner badass? In a sense of accomplishment that you'll never get handling in the quarter two report. So it's like, what does man look like? How are we supposed to know someone's a man? How do you get it? Your notes, it says, when I became a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. So if you measure it by maturity, and by the way, maturity doesn't come because I get older. Maturity doesn't happen because I get married, or I father a child, or I have the biggest boat in the neighborhood. Maturity is something that you build. And it's the difference between a boy and a man. Here's what it is. Men act differently than boys. And that's the difference. Now let's see what it looks like this week in your notes. Write the very first thing. A man lives with a greater purpose, but a boy lives only in the moment. So what is it about? There's a story in history that kind of shows this whole thing. And somebody wrote it down and put it in the Bible. It's about a boy who becomes a king. And his name is David. And he's the second Hebrew king, king of the Israelite nation. And the first king gets fired. And there's a man named Samuel. And his job is to go pick the next king. And God tells him, go see a guy named Jesse. So Samuel does. He goes and sees Jesse, and sure enough, Jesse's got all these boys. And man, these guys are like first-round draft picks. Every single one of them looks like they could be the king. I'm sure Samuel gets there, and he's like, whoa, you know, one of these guys is going to be the king. This isn't going to be that difficult. And that's where the story gets a little bit of a twist. Because he looks at all these boys. Every single one of them looks manly. They could be the king. And God says, I'm not choosing them. And maybe you've been fooled before too, where somebody in your life, either growing up or even now, I mean, they look like what it really means to be a man. It's like, that's the guy right there. You know, so it was a coach or a mentor, and then you sort of open your life to them and it doesn't turn out so good. Or maybe one of the girls here, you picked, you know, the star quarterback or the really awesome athlete in high school, or you fell in love with your boss, you know, because that's what a man really is. And then you find out as the years go by, you're stuck with a boy. It happens. And Samuel, he's scratching his head at this point. He sees these guys. He's like, God, what? I mean, how come you can't just pick one of them? I mean, they all look like they're the king. He asks Jesse, he says, do you have any other sons? I mean, I'm supposed to come here. And Jesse says, well, I've got one son left, but he's the youngest guy. I mean, he's the least likely to be the king. He's the insignificant one in the family. I mean, we keep that guy down taking care of the family animals. We didn't even invite him to the audition. And maybe you're a guy here today and you've been in that exact same spot. All the manly guys, all the kingly guys, they got invited to the audition and you didn't even get invited to get a chance. Still stings. And in walks David. And I'm sure Samuel's, you know, he's like, he looks at David, then he looks at the guys that really look like men. Then he looks at David and he's like, what's up, God? And God says something to Samuel that's a great lesson, and it's a great lesson for all of us here today. God says to Samuel, Samuel, when it comes to people, you look at the outside, but I look at the inside. That's my king. And at that moment, something changes for David, and the whole trajectory of his life is different as he starts to transition from a boy to a man, because he's living for a greater purpose. Not just in the moment. They say that by the time you turn 21 now, a man will have played video games for 10,000 hours, he'll invest. So you're in your video games, you're in your virtual reality there, you know, and you're playing videos, and like you can be a warrior inside there and a hero inside there, but that's virtual. And what we're wondering is, does any of what happens in the video world, the virtual world, transition into the real world? Because you can, like, get lost in that moment, living moment to moment. David has a greater purpose. It shows up just a little time later. His brothers joined the Hebrew army, and they're involved in this border battle with their arch enemies, the Philistines. And David's dad, Jesse, sends him to bring some supplies to his brothers. And when he gets there, both sides are sort of in this standoff, and the leaders of each army decide they're going to stage a cage match to decide who's going to win. Winner take all. You choose a soldier, we'll choose a soldier, and they go into the cage, and whoever wins, that's who wins the entire battle. Now, the problem is nobody in the Hebrew army wants to get into the cage with the soldier that the other army has, because they've seen this dude. His name is Goliath. He's like a giant. He's like the Hulk over there. So nobody in the Hebrew army, they don't want to go into the cage match. All of a sudden, all these men turn into boys, because now they're facing a moment that they don't want any part of. And of course, that's the problem when you live moment to moment. Everything's great in my marriage this week. It sucks next week. I'm out. The kids are fantastic this week. I mean, God, their grades are great. They're doing super in their athletics. And then they have a crappy week, and they said, these are your kids, girl. Moment to moment living versus living with a greater purpose. And David is really awesome in this situation. Like, he sees the whole thing, and he volunteers to jump in the middle of this thing with this giant Goliath. Let me read it to you. It's in your notes. But David said to Saul, that's the king that got fired, there were times when I was taking care of my father's sheep that wild animals came to take the sheep from the flock. Once there was a lion, and another time a bear. I chased that wild animal, attacked it, and took the sheep from its mouth. The wild animal jumped on me, but I caught it by the fur under its mouth, and I hit it and killed it. I killed both the lion and the bear like that, and I will kill that foreigner Goliath just like them. Goliath will die because he made fun of the army of the living God. The Lord saved me from the lion and the bear. he will also save me from the Philistine. This big giant used to come out every single day and taunt everybody. He'd just sort of stand out there and say, you want some of this? And nobody did. But David, living with a higher purpose and connected to someone higher, jumps in the middle of it. And can you imagine what it was like for all these boys in the army when he kills the giant? And the Bible says he cuts off the giant's head. So here he comes now. He's not that old. He doesn't look much like a man, but he comes back into camp and he's got the head of Goliath with him. He doesn't want to be like, let it be completely clear the difference between a boy and a man, y'all. The head of a giant. And a really cool part of the story is it said that he took Goliath's weapons and put them in his own tent. And I thought, maybe, you know, he went to sleep that night. I don't know if this has ever happened to you as a guy. Like, you do something really great. Like, David goes to sleep that night, and he wakes up. He goes, wait a second. Did that really happen? And then he sees the weapons. It's not that men don't need moments, but their confirmation that we're a part of something greater. It isn't to make us feel great. It's not to give us some kind of an instant buzz. And David, he's in like a completely different place in all this. So let me ask you the question, like the transition from being a boy to a man. Do you have someone greater that you're connected to and you're living in a greater way? Or are you living moment to moment? And why is it important? Because if you don't have someone greater connected to, or you're not a part of something greater, you will be swept away. There will be some moment, and you'll be swept away. None of us are strong enough to stand against the different moments that come into our life. None of us are. Some moment will arrive, and it'll overwhelm me, and it'll just be too big for me, and it will sweep me away unless I'm connected to someone greater. I like to see it like a compass in my life. I have a picture of it. So here's what it looks like in my life. Like moments come and go, moments come and go. But back to my scouting days or camping days. Like when you had the compass, the cool thing about the compass is north is always north. I mean, the compass in the mountains, the compass down on the beach. You know, it doesn't matter who's holding the compass. It doesn't matter how old they are. It doesn't matter how much money they have, what family, company. North is always north. Like, nothing sweeps away north. And when I'm, like, connected to a greater one, when I have a greater purpose, moments come and go, but I'm not swept away. What do you have in your life that's greater than who you are? What do you have going on that's bigger than your life? Men live for a greater purpose. Boys, moment to moment. It's our rite of passage. Number two, and write it in your notes, a man is a team player, but a boy wants to be the star. And I understand the problem. I mean, you watch all the athletes that we watch, and they all say the same thing. I don't care about being a star. I just want to win, and I'm all about the team and everything. But you wonder, really? Or do you just want to win so you could be the star? Because honestly, when you see the stars, I mean, like you're popular, it's got to feel so good. That's the life I want. I want the life of a star. I mean, everything is star-driven. We go to, you know, see the games, the athletes sell all the tickets, the star of the big screen, the music stars. Even social media now is starting to be driven by stars. It's crazy. I mean, you know, the stars that we see on the big screen or music stars, athlete stars, even when they're off of the field and it comes out that their life is a mess, there's still this thing in me that just, like, it believes, oh, but if my life would be so much better if I was a star. And Jesus has a better way. Let me read it to you in your notes. Then they began to argue among themselves about who would be the greatest among them. Jesus picked 12 guys. That's his team. They're arguing, but Jesus said to them, the kings of the world rule over their people, and those who have authority over others want to be called the great providers for the people. But you must not be like that. The one with the most authority among you should act as if he is the least important. The one who leads should be like the one who serves. Now, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be really good at something or awesome at something. There's nothing wrong with wanting to win. But here's the difference. Boys want star power so they can have praise. Men use star power for the benefit of others. And it's different. I mean, it's fine when you're using your star power as a man and someone's grateful or thankful for you. That's awesome. I mean, like, to receive gratitude is great, but gratitude is very different than wanting praise. Do you know we're really not designed by God to process praise very well? And that's the problem with wanting to be a star. Like, even when you're a star and you get praise, the first thing you want is more praise. God never, like, made us to be people that were satisfied by praise. Gratitude does. So it's fine when you do something and someone is thankful. This is Father's Day, so for all the dads, maybe they're going to, you know, give you a brand new Porsche today to show you they're thankful. I hope so. That'd be awesome. But, I mean, whatever it is, you know, barbecue, whatever you get today. Maybe it's just a kiss or whatever it is. I'm hoping for more than that, but just shout out to my wife. But anyways, like gratitude is safe for us. We can process gratitude. We don't process praise well. Are you chasing it? Desiring it? See, men don't chase praise. Men just use all their star power to benefit others. And I know that even this talk for some of the women here today, you may not like this talk. Because you're like, when someone talks about, you know, a man benefiting others, that is not how it's shown up in your life. When I say act like a man, that does not cause warm fuzzies for you. And I am not going to pretend to understand that, because I know I don't. I would like to say, though, that I'm sorry. And ask you to at least open your heart to the idea that God never intended it that way. If you've been hurt by a man, maybe really what happened is you were hurt by a boy, regardless of age. They wanted to be the star. They couldn't use who they were to benefit somebody else, and you got hurt. Is it time to forgive them? Let it go. Go to God and just say, I want to get past that. See, for men here today, you have an awesome opportunity. And I want to ask all the guys here today, who's your team? Who's your inner circle? Who's your posse? Who do you run with? Who's your team? You know, for a boy, it's super easy to look good in front of all the people that are the outsiders. But the insiders know. And men, they have this tremendous opportunity with their friends, their family, with the people that are the insiders in their life to use their star power to benefit them. And that is the difference. It's a rite of passage. Boys want praise. When you become a man, you're fine if someone's thankful, but that's not the point. Your life is about benefiting, and especially the insiders in your life. Now, number three, write this in your notes. A man repents, but a boy makes excuses. Last one. So this Eskimo is having a conversation with his wood stove. The door is open and there's no fire in it. And the Eskimo has a log in his hand and he's saying to the wood stove, "You give me heat, I'll give you wood." And I thought, you know, that's how I feel when I know I've done something wrong and I need to go admit it to someone. You know, that's how I feel when, like, when I know it's my fault and I just feel stuck. And because here's what it is. I want them to do something for me first, and then I'll do something for them. Like, when I'm stuck like that, I'm like, I know it's my fault. I know I need to go say I'm sorry. I need to ask forgiveness. But I want them to make the first move. And then I'll do it. That's a boy. And God's way different than that, too. Look what it says about God. Or do you not presume on the riches of his kindness and forbearance and patience, not knowing that God's kindness is meant to lead you to repentance? Now check this out. This is important. God doesn't use threats or fear. So if you come from that sort of a background, either in your families or religion or some boss or somewhere, and like somehow they gave, you know, this image of God that, you know, he's going to, you know, you're going to get in so much trouble, or that, like some kind of a religious threat or something. Here's the bottom line. Men know that God has a kind heart. And then he sets up this environment of kindness. So it's okay for me to say I'm sorry. I don't approach God like he's angry or mad at me. Men know that God has a kind heart. And part of what a man does is they extend that kindness into those around them. A man knows that God's creating this environment of kindness, that I can be in that and I can go and say, I'm sorry, it was my fault, forgive me. Like in that environment, and they extend that to those around them in their families. Men don't make threats and they don't use fear. That's boys. I'll take my ball and go home. You'll be sorry. That's how boys act. Men's understand God's kind, and I create kindness in my family. Today is my wedding anniversary. Clarice and I have been married 35 years today. So it's been a lot of work for her to help me mature, but I think she's like sort of getting somewhere in it, you know. But honestly, if someone asks me, what, you know, is there any secret to be married 35 years? I would say, well, it's not so much that we didn't screw up. It's how we treated each other after we did. I mean, in 35 years, if someone said, what's the secret? I'd say, it's not about not screwing up. It's about how you act after you screw up. I've worked really hard to create this environment of kindness with my wife. And she has too. That there's this level of kindness between us, so when we make mistakes, we can go to one another and admit it and talk it out and be forgiven. And we've done the same in our families. Our sons and now our daughters, we've wanted to create this environment of kindness. So everybody knows that within that environment, that they can go to someone when they do something wrong, and it's not if, it's when. And say, hey, that's on me this time. I'm sorry. I did that wrong. And when you have an environment of kindness in your family and your children, like men, who do you do life with? Where you work? If you can extend that kindness out to people you work with, your friends, your extended family, who do you wish was at church right now? Just like in your brain. They need to hear that God has a kind heart. They got a ton to unload, but they're afraid they're going to get in trouble, penalized. Who would you extend kindness to, and who's in your world? Don't try them to be religious. Don't try to get them to jump through any hoops. Just help them see that God has a kind heart and they can approach him with whatever. Now here's our prayer, and it's the last thing we'll finish with today. Jesus, help me capture all my opportunities to grow. Help me capture all my opportunities. So be careful how you act. These are difficult days. Yay and amen. Don't be fools, be wise. Make the most of every opportunity. Circle it. That's how we mature. We mature by God bringing these opportunities into our life. And when the opportunity arrives... Now, let me say something as we get done here. At Eastlake Church, it's like this big, huge funnel. I mean, everything we say is like goes into this big, huge funnel, and it all sort of funnels down to Jesus. So the idea here is at the end of the day is that we need Jesus to do all of this stuff. I mean, everything at Eastlake sort of funnels down to this idea that, you know, Jesus was a real person in history, and yes, he died on a cross, but there was a resurrection, and he can be in our life now. Like, that's the walk away point. It all funnels down to, Jesus, I need your help to do this stuff.